Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Pete from Netcong, New Jersey.
My name is Pete. I'm an alcoholic. It's been through the grace of a loving God, having a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous that took me through the big book, and having a home group and staying close to that home group that I've been able to stay sober since December 14, 2008. And I can say I take no credit at all. My home group is in Netcong. We're called the Working With Others group. We meet Thursday nights at 8 o'clock and Sundays at 6:30, and it's a great group. It's like this. You know, there's lots of people that are happy to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's the kind of group that when I walk in scared the crap out of me, because I walked into a room where a bunch of people seemed to have it together, and I didn't have it together at all. You know, I was 105 pounds, and I had a mullet, and neither of those things were by choice. I wasn't looking for the heroin chic model look, and I wasn't really looking to have a mullet. And you guys can honestly say is that neither of those things are bad. It's just a matter of fact for a guy like me is that after a while, taking care of myself didn't really take precedence over the drink or whatever else that I was doing. You know, it was more important for me to wake up and get whatever it is that I needed to get through the day so that I can feel comfortable and just not be sick than it was to take a shower or eat. You know, and I can tell you that wasn't the thing in Alcoholics Anonymous before I got here. That was like, oh, I have a problem. You know, I think I realized I had a problem with whatever it was that I was doing somewhere around the age of 16. You know, because I can tell you that somewhere around the age of 16 is that I realized that my life revolved around taking the walk to the drink. You know, everything I did kind of just revolved around that. And I can tell you that it revolved around that because I liked the way it made me feel. You know, I mean, prior to finding booze or prior to finding whatever it is that I found, I was just as uncomfortable as I was when I got here in AA. And if you saw me when I got here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't look anybody in the eyes, and I couldn't have a decent conversation about anything, you know, because I was constantly thinking about what you guys were thinking about me, you know, and realizing that coming into a meeting, you know, where everyone's head's facing straight and I'm walking in the back door, I think, you know, why is the door, you know, just that much louder than everybody else, and that kid's 3 minutes late to a meeting, and then what are you doing here, you know, and then really that's how I felt when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, is what am I doing here? And like my first sponsor always said, is that I was constantly looking for a solution to a problem I didn't even know I had. You know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't realize how screwed I was, you know, and until I sat down with somebody that had an experience with the big book and had an experience with working the steps and was armed with the facts about himself and sat down and related some of his story to me is really when I found that thing in Alcoholics Anonymous that I was missing for a little while, and that was that common identification with somebody else. You know, because for a while I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you're as self-centered as I am, it's really hard to listen to the guy who's speaking because you're thinking about what you need to do after the meeting, what you didn't do before the meeting, and what you need to do tomorrow and the next day, and when vacation's coming up, and when the hell is my boss going to give me a raise, you know? And I can tell you that it's really difficult to be new in Alcoholics Anonymous and constantly be thinking of where else I need to be. And that was basically my story. You know, I think the reasons why I stayed sober are just the three things that I said before, you know, is that I've had a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous the entire time I've been sober. I've worked steps with the sponsors that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been part of a home group. You know, and I've been part of home groups like this, and this was my home group for about a year, and then to be asked to come speak somewhere that you know, I parted ways with is amazing, because generally when I part ways with something, we're just better off without each other, you know? And I can tell you that it's awesome to be back here. I can say that alcoholism in my life has played a big part way before I ever picked up a drink, you know, and you hear it all the time, and probably a lot from this podium is that, you know, the feelings of uncomfortability, and what that looked like is that I would come into class and I would see a couple kids that were having fun and getting a lot of attention, and they seemed like they were, you know, having a good time, and I would sit in the middle thinking about what I can do to be exactly like them, because God forbid I had to find out who I am, you know, and find out what my, you know, good and bad qualities are in life, and I sat there, and basically, you know, from first grade on and then until about, you know, ninth grade, is that I was constantly looking around at everybody else and just pulling pieces of who you guys were and trying to make them a part of me, you know, and that started from first grade on, and what happened was first grade I made a conscious decision that whoever I was wasn't good enough, and I can tell you that basically I sat in that class, I looked to my left and I looked to my right, and I saw a kid named Steve and I saw a kid named Chris, and we were talking before the meeting is that I really don't remember names that well, And the reason I don't remember names is because I'm just that self-centered. You know, I was in school with them for about 6 years, and I can honestly tell you that those probably are not those kids' names. But they played a big part of my life, you know, because I sat in that room, and I just wanted to be exactly like them. And there'd be days where Chris would be in second grade history class doing really well academically, and there'd be days where Steve would be in the principal's office for saying things that are inappropriate, you know, by Catholic school standards. And I can tell you that for a while, is that I just chased those two things back and forth. That I would either do really well academically or I would just do really well acting out, because somewhere in between that I was getting attention, and I liked the idea of getting attention. You know, for a guy like me, if I could walk into work, walk into my family's house, and somebody to lay out a red carpet and give me an attaboy every time I do something good, I think I might be okay. You know, and the reality of that is that it's probably not going to happen, you know, and probably. there's always hope here. And I can see I could say this is that from first grade on is that it was either one of those two qualities in life that I was constantly chasing, and even after I got sober it was one of those qualities that I was constantly chasing is either I was trying to be, you know, acting out in all sorts of ways, or I was trying to do really well at work. And I can tell you that that only works for a short while for a guy like me, and then it's on to the next thing. You know, I got in a lot of fights growing up, and I say this the majority of the time I talk, is that, you know, you guys judging by the size of me is that I didn't win any of them, you know, and I'm like 0-14, you know, that's not good odds. And I can tell you that me, you know, odds before drinking, odds while drinking really don't matter, you know, because like it says on page, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 23, is that without sufficient force, I can't remember the pain and suffering from a day, week, or month ago, you know, and I'm either going to drink again or I'm going to do something stupid. You know, because that's just, it's a matter of fact for a guy like me, because I like the feeling that it gets. I like the attention after you get beat up and everyone's paying attention to you. I mean, that's really how self-centered I am. I mean, every mother loves to take care of the kid when they have a black eye, you know, or when they're sick. You know, I don't say I have a black eye. My mom's a little weird. I grew up in a family that was fairly normal, you know, and I said that to a therapist one time, and he disagreed with me, and I can tell you I never went back to that guy again. And the reason why he said my family wasn't normal is because I finally, you know, what's weird is that when I get honest with people that aren't in Alcoholics Anonymous, that don't understand what it's like to feel a little maladjusted to life and have a perception problem of some sort, is that when I start telling my story, it's from my point of view. And really what happens is that over the time in Alcoholics Anonymous is that my point of view changes on my childhood and changes on the things that have happened in my life. And when I told the therapist that day, you know, in between coming down and getting drunk again is really that there were some things that happened, and I had to change my last name, and I went from school to school, and, you know, the state of New Jersey and my dad didn't agree on the appropriate distance that he should be between me and my family, and we had to move a whole bunch, and it felt like for about 7 or 8 years of my life that I was always in hiding, and I wasn't supposed to tell anybody who exactly I was, and I was supposed to take on some sort of identity, you know, and for a guy like me, that's a good scapegoat, you know, and that's exactly where I hid for a long time. And I can tell you that even when my problem is removed, you know, and I can be perfectly honest, is that even after my dad died and even after that wasn't a part of my life anymore, I still held on to the idea that I can't tell you exactly what's going on with me, you know, and I still didn't feel relief, you know, because every time there's a problem in my life and it seems to go away, whether it's a work problem, you know, I lose my job so I don't have a work problem anymore, or, you know, I'm with my, you know, I have a girl and she leaves because, you know, for whatever reason, I don't have that problem anymore, you know, and I realize that regardless of what is there and what isn't there in my life, is that I constantly feel like there's always something wrong, you know, and that's without a drink, and towards the end of my drinking, that was with a drink, and I can tell you that somewhere between 6th and 7th grade, what happened was I was starting to feel uncomfortable in the school I was there for 6 years, there's a grade of 25, and I feel like what my mom is doing isn't good enough for me. She's working two jobs to put me through a grade school, and all I can do is sit there and find everything that's wrong with it. And I convince her that what she's doing isn't good enough for me. I switch schools, and for me, about 3 months prior to going to that school is like every other moment of my life that seems like it's going to be a turning point, or it's going to be like something that fixes my life, is that I spend just 3 months obsessing about it, you know, what I have to do to get everybody to like me, what I have to do to walk into that class and for the red carpet to be rolled out. And I spent 3 months thinking about how this is going to be the thing in my life at 11, 12 years old that's going to fix me. And what happens is, like most things that I hold the expectation to, is that it just doesn't hold true, you know. Unrealistic goals to the extreme. And what happens is I walk into that class and I make a conscious decision before I get there that I need to be the smartest kid in class. I need to be the coolest kid in class. I need to be the most athletic kid in class. And all the girls need to like me. And if all four of those things line up, I'll be all right. And I walk into that class, and I raise my hand a couple times. I get a couple questions wrong. I go out to the playground. I realize that Pat's a little bit better than me at basketball. And you know, a couple other things happen, and within the first 2 weeks, I'm talking myself down. And for the next 2 years, I spend in that school just completely involved in self-centered fear, just thinking about how I let myself down and how I'm going to let my family down, and I'm not going to be a doctor. And because, you know, if you have the grandparents I have, you're predestined. They tell you where you're going to be when you're growing up. And I just felt like I was always letting people down and that I wasn't good enough, you know. And I got really involved in sports at that point. And what happened for me is that sports kind of filled that void for a little while. And what sports do for a guy like me is that they make me feel like I'm a part of. The same thing when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous is that for a little while, just feeling a part of was good enough. You know, just feeling like I was part of the team or that we were on the same journey was fantastic. You know, and for about 2 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what kept me here. You know, is that I felt like I was a part of. And I can tell you that, you know, that falls to the backdrop really easy. Is between 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, my mom thinks it's a good idea to send me to public school. And before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, that was the problem. If she didn't send me to a school in my own town where I didn't know a bunch of people, I might have been okay. And if you went to the school in my town, those kids are not okay. I went to that school and I had the same expectations as I did everywhere else, that I walked into the same classrooms and I walked around the same kids, and I just realized that I wasn't good enough. And I tried a number of, you know, various things to try to fit in. I tried out for the freshman basketball team, and for a guy like me, if you are 5'1", weigh 105 pounds, you're probably not going to make it. And I can tell you that I ran off the court crying after they told me I didn't make the team. And for a long time, I played the victim. And what I realized is that slowly over a period of time is that the coach wasn't picking on me. He wasn't saying that you're too small or you're too short or whatever else. I can tell you now is that I can't dribble, I can't play defense, and then I'm not that good, you know. And that's really why I didn't make the team. And it's just a matter of changing my perception. I ran home and I cried about that for 3 months, and I joined track because you can't get kicked off of track. And they want people to run track, you know. And I spent a while just kind of playing that field. And what happened was somewhere around that winter, a freshman year, this girl came down to my house, which is a huge deal for a guy like me. I can't even talk to other guys, let alone other girls. And she's coming down to my house, and I'm like, jackpot. And she came down to my house and she asked me out to a dance, and before I can even say yes, the three things that run through my mind are is that we got to get a bigger house because I'm moving in the basement, mom, with her. We're going to get a white picket fence and a dog, you know, because it seems like it's going to be the thing to my life that fixes me, you know. All I need to be is in a relationship, because that's what most 13 or 14-year-old guys are doing at this time. You know, they're getting relationships, they're playing sports, they're getting jobs, and, you know, my mom told me I couldn't work, which is great for a guy like me, and don't like work. And what happened was I showed up and about 3 hours before the dance, this is what my life looks like. It's the same thing that happened to me in seventh grade. It's the same thing that happens to me reoccurring throughout my life without Alcoholics Anonymous. And even in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I'm not trying to practice the principles and stay God-centered, is that about 3 hours before is that I get dressed up like this. I comb my hair to the side. I put a corsage on the left-hand side. I start playing music, and I'm looking at myself in the mirror, reenacting what's going to happen for the next 3 hours because I need to know, you know, because God forbid I don't have a plan. And what happened is I realized a couple things. I look like an idiot. I can't dance, and she doesn't like you anyway. You know, she just couldn't find anybody else to go with. And I'm counting myself out before I even get there. And that's like most things in life. Before the experience even happens, I can't enjoy it because I've already talked my way out of it. And I show up to that dance, and I don't know if you guys have been out with a girl that, you know, if you look like you're 3 seconds away from killing yourself and the dance isn't going that well and you're on the outside looking in and she looks like she's having a good time, it just feels like there's no reason to go on anymore. What's the point? You know, the only thing that I was asked to do to show up and I can't do it, you know, and it's little things like that before Alcoholics Anonymous that used to keep me up at night and drive me insane. You know, and what I can tell you is that for the majority of my time before Alcoholics Anonymous and in the very beginning is that the last 15 or 20 minutes before I went to bed were the absolute worst moments of my life. You know, because everything was off. The TV was off. There wasn't noise in the background. I wasn't around a bunch of people, and I was just trying to fall asleep, and I was by myself. And the only thing I can think of is, you blew it. You know, what's the point anyway? You know, why go on? And then on comes the cure, and the shades get drawn, and, you know, I'm watching Molly Ringwald movies at 11 o'clock at night, and I can't stand my life. And I can tell you that from the podium, and I'm absolutely 100% honest about that, is that that's what I do. I'm not a tough guy. You know, I'm not one of those drinkers that go out and do a lot of crazy things. I don't. I sit and lull in my room and just think about how you guys are screwing me. And what happens is I basically I show up to school the next day, and my buddy asked me if I want to go to his cabin and drink, and I can tell you that three guys in the cabin with no electricity and there's no girls, and it's the middle of spring break, and you're 14 years old. That sucks, you know. And I walk into that cabin, and basically the intentions were that night is that we're going to drink. And to me, drinking meant one of two things, that you're either going to end up like my father, and if you end up like my dad, the cops are going to be called, you're going to drive my mom into bankruptcy, you know, there's going to be a lot of legal issues, and things aren't going good. And I knew, and I made a decision there, is that I didn't want to end up like that. And I can tell you that for decisions for a guy like me don't mean anything, you know. And the second thing is that I saw the people in my neighborhood. I moved back to my house after living in a recovery house for a year, and I realized that my neighborhood is like the best place if you want to be a drunk. It's a private community. There's 80 homes. There's 3 nonprofit bars. And the cops can't come in unless they're called in, you know. And we don't pay certain taxes because we do our own road work, and it's like a cult, you know. It's fantastic. And the more I look at it, that's really what it becomes. And I can tell you is that if you want to be an alcoholic, if you want to drink at my age, that's the place to do it. The parents buy summer cabins that are right by the pool for the kids to live in for the summer between the ages of 14 and 17. I mean, what more do you want? And what happened was in that neighborhood, every day after work, is that the adults would come home, they'd go to the bar, they'd bring their wives and their kids down, the kids would play outside, and the beginning of the conversation would be like how much they hate the job, how much they hate their wives would be next to them, how much they hate the kids, and somewhere along the night what had happened was the conversation would turn, the lights would get brighter, and the music would get louder, and the conversation would be like, oh, you want pizza? Here you go, kid, you know? How about we go on vacation next week, you know? And although none of those things really happened is, as far as vacation is concerned, is that really that I saw something change from the time they went in that bar from the time they left. And that was the other view I had of what drinking did to people, you know. And for me, the good outweighs the bad in my eyes, you know. Ending up like my father or coming home every day and having a ball, you know. And what I made a decision that night is that I was going to see what alcohol does. You know, I'm just going to see what it feels like. And already from the get-go, before I take a drink, is that I'm already looking for just what it feels like, you know. I don't want to know what it tastes like. I'm not really too concerned. I want to know what happens between the beginning and the end for most other people. And I walk in that cabin, and I have a couple of drinks, and what happens is nothing, really. I have a couple of drinks. I turn to my left. I ask my buddy if I'm drunk. He reassures me that I'm not. And the same thing that happens, you know, every other time I drink is that in the beginning I start questioning the amount I'm going to consume. And somewhere throughout that night is that I don't care anymore, you know. And that's the difference between me and the average tempered drinker. You know, my mom has a couple drinks, and what happens to her is like most other people, is that she has a couple drinks, she starts to feel it, she gets red in the face, she starts getting a little flustered, puts down the glass, slides it across the table, and goes, I think I had enough. And for a guy like me, at the end of the night, I'm taking her glass and her money, and I'm leaving, you know? And that's, and I'm not saying that happens to everybody, that's just what happens to a guy like me. My buddy John says it best, you know, and what he says is that a couple Jack and Cokes and he's looking for some Coke, you know, like that's the kind of drinker I am. Whatever it is that I have in me, I just want more of whatever it is. And I don't care about the intentions I had going into the night. Knowing what it felt like and getting wasted were not the same goals I had that night, you know, but somewhere along the night, my ideas and what I decided had shifted, you know, and that's why I said decisions for a guy like me really don't mean much. And I can tell you that for the next 4 years, I drank like I had missed out in the previous 13 or 14 years. And what that looked like is that my life slowly began to revolve around the drink. And like I said, my life slowly revolved around getting towards the drink rather than away from the drink and not ending up like the people that I said in my life that I didn't want to end up like. And I didn't know for sure that I was going to end up like them. Is that really what happened is to the middle is that, you know, there was tons of parties. I mean, I hated them, but I went, you know, because there was booze there. I'm not a party guy. I'm like a 3 guys sitting in a house alone watching TV playing Xbox, you know, and that's the kind of drunk I am, is that I just want to be left alone, I want to get drunk, and I want to forget what happened that day. And you know, there was tons of parties, and there was a lot of fun stuff that happened, and, you know, flipping the car and having things, you know, just occur, just like part of the stories that we have here in AA. And really what I like to focus on is just the fact that when I drank around a bunch of people that drank like me, it seemed like somewhere along the night, people dropped off and people kept going. And the people that kept going, I've either seen in AA or stuff has happened, you know. And that's what happened, my friends, is that stuff just happened, you know. Somewhere between 16 and 18 years old, the majority of the people I hung out with were away, You know, I had a buddy move to the country of Jordan. I had another one move to Puerto Rico. I mean, like, my friends traveled to get away from what they thought the problem was. And I started to travel to find out, you know, what my outs were in life, because I couldn't stand the way I was acting anymore. You know, because every moral fiber of my being that told me that that was wrong somewhere along the night or somewhere along the day just didn't matter anymore. And I can tell you that that's quite different from the way my mom drinks, you know, and that's quite different from the way the people in my family drink. You know, the baseball and the sports and everything else, the track went out the window. That wasn't really a hard one to give up. But, like, the athletics and you know, the glory of being on the baseball team and being, you know, somebody in class that was reliable and was, you know, a good note taker. A lot of that stuff that I used to pride myself on seemed to not matter anymore. And from starting high school and ending high school, what had happened was I went from being on the honor roll and being a part of a lot of things in my school to a month before I graduated, I got arrested, and I had the most signings to in school and the most out of the suspensions, and I prided myself on that, you know, because it was like a badge of honor to a guy like me, you know, look what I did, you know, and what happens is the people you attract really aren't the same, and like I said, the people that I attracted seem to just kind of drift away. I can tell you this, that throughout my drinking, really what was fun is that in the beginning to the end, this is kind of what happened, is that drinking was a weekend thing, and I can tell you that I was probably the best weekend warrior my town has ever seen. I was at every football game, I was at every sporting event, I was at every party that was on the weekends. And then I found a bunch of people that lived in the same neighborhood as me that had the keys to the cabins that I'd talked about previously, and my buddy's aunt lived above the bar. Which is fantastic because the bar during the week isn't open past like 9 or 10 in my neighborhood. So after 9 or 10 during the week, we'd run downstairs, fill up, and that was it. And if we did chores around the neighborhood, there was a guy, Bob, who was a little weird, and he would give you, you know, a case of beer if you did some chores around the neighborhood. And that was great, you know. And until I was about 17 or 18 years old, I never paid for anything, you know, because it was just kind of handed over. And that's fantastic for a cheap guy like me. And I can say this, is that what happened somewhere along the way is that we came up with holidays. I found out about Thirsty Thursday, and that was fantastic, you know. And that was a real holiday. We came up with, like, other things like Wacky Wednesday. What happens on Wacky Wednesdays is that we get loaded before school, and we see who gets caught first. That was a game. That was a drinking game for us. And that was always ended pretty funny, you know. Either somebody was falling down the stairs or getting arrested in school. And either way, it was hilarious. You know, we just had fun, and the consequences weren't that big. I mean, you get caught drunk in school, they send you to IOP, you get a slap on the wrist, and you're back in a couple weeks, you know. And your schoolwork gets sent home with you, and they send you a private tutor from the hours of 3 and 5 o'clock at night, and that's a small price to pay, you know. That's fun. I mean, I don't have to wake up to noon, you know. And thankfully, none of those things really, they didn't necessarily happen to me. What had happened was is that I kind of started to fall off in the backdrop of what was going on around me. And it seems like everybody else, once again, was participating in life, and I was on the outside looking in, you know. And I would come home from school, and I didn't want to go play sports, and I didn't want to study. All I wanted to do was get wasted. And, you know, like I said, it's not an extravagant life for a guy like me. I sit in the woods, I go home, I watch Dazed and Confused, or I watch Grandma's Boy, and then I pass out, you know. And that's basically it for about 6 months to a year before I graduated high school. And somewhere along the time, I crashed a car, and there were some things in the car. And, you know, this is the funny thing about a guy like me, is that when I want help, I get honest about this much about what's going on in my life so that you'll help me, you know, so you can understand my problem, so that you can give me whatever it is that you can give me, and I take it, and then I move on. And what happened that night is that I crashed the car. There were some non-conference-approved substances in the back seat, and I flipped the car over in a lake. I had my seatbelt on, and I walked out, and it wasn't a big deal. I took out 2 trees and a telephone pole, and that night, it just seemed like, what's funny about that is that I won best car senior year, and they thought it was funny because I didn't have a car, you know, and that's the kind of friends I had, and that was the kind of the school I went to, is that, you know, the kid that crashed his car should probably get best car, I didn't show up for the picture that day, for the yearbook. I was in school, you know, and that just seemed to be kind of like my life, is that instances started to build up, and I started to look back and realize that I wasn't participating in really much. But what happened that night is I crashed my car, and when I got home, I knew they told us that they were going to be checking the car for pollutants. Anytime you crash a car in a lake or a river or a body of water, they have to check for the amount of oil that's in your car, the gas, the whatever else. And the car was in the the tow truck yard. And I went home that night and I told my mom about the incident, you know, because I had to tell somebody because I needed help. And what she said was, this is your one shot. This is the one thing I'm going to do nice for you. And I was like, oh, thank God, you know. And she's like, I'm going to drug test you afterwards. I was like, that's fine. Just help me, you know, because regardless of what's going to happen later, as long as I'm getting your help now, that's all that matters. I'll work around the details later. And I, we went to the lot the next day. I got everything out. I flushed down the toilet. And slowly but surely, you know, just little things from about, it was 2 weeks after I got my license. So it was from September to about November. Yeah, I know. It was a good call on my part. I had a maroon 1990 Crown Vic gone. It was missed. And what happened was from about that time is that I made a conscious decision is that I wanted to try to get sober. And what that looked like is that I would get really involved in school and I would get really involved in running and I would try to work out. And all the things I hear new guys say to me now is what I need to do is I need to work out, I need to get fit, I need to get a girlfriend, and I need to do well in whatever it is, job or school. And I had the same thing, you know. And about a year... And a couple months before I got sober, it was just those things. It was those things that I thought were going to keep me sober. It was activity that I thought was going to keep me sober. And what happened was I would last a week. I would last a couple weeks. I would last maybe a month. And then I would drink. And somewhere between February and May of that year is that I just couldn't take it anymore. You know, it was why fight and try to control and enjoy the only thing you really enjoy? And what happened was I started to do the same things once again. And like it talks about in our book is that, you know, when we pick back up, it just seems like it's progressive in nature. And the relapse, you know, they always get worse. And I can tell you is that just that, you know, I picked up and it was worse, you know. And Visine and Breathman and whatever else started to become my best friends. And I started to just drink solely to not feel so weird anymore. And from that time to about December of the following year is that I didn't care anymore. I was just like, I give up. You know, I'm just going to drink as much as I can, as fast as I can, as frequently as I can. And that's what I did. And for, you know, I don't know the math. I'm bad with that. 8 months? I don't know. Whatever. And what happened was for about those 8 months is that everything in my life that seemed to, you know, that I was holding on to, the job and you know, the car that I got back and the other things that started to come back in my life from those periods of, like, trying to hold it together for a little while were just gone, you know. I had a car that was nice, and what was nice about the car is that I was able to get from point A to point B, but what happens for a guy like me is that if you're trying to pay for a car insurance and a car payment, and you only have a job that pays you $94.64 every weekend on the dot, and I know that if I showed up, is that that's a problem if you're spending between $60 and $100 a day, you know? And what happened was the inconveniences in my life just started to kind of build up, you know, and the consequences didn't seem to matter. And what Bill talks about in his story is that feared sober him for a bit. And what happened was in between there would be little periods of where I would get scared of what's going to happen. And then, like I said, page 23 would happen, you know, I'd look back and realize that it's just something that happened. It happens to a lot of people, you know. A lot of people crash cars, you know. And I started to rationalize everything I did just so I could take another drink. And I can say that wasn't, I don't know if it was necessarily by choice. It just seemed to be the way things went. And I had accepted it. And somewhere between November and December, my mom and I had a little disagreement, go figure. Problems with personal relationships were a constant in my life, you know. And what happened was I ran away like most 18-year-olds do when they have an idea. And I think most people, you know, I wouldn't even say 18-year-olds, is that I had an idea and I stood firmly in the fact that I was able to handle life on my own, making $94 every weekend. And I had a car, you know, and I had clothes and a laundry basket. And that was it, you know. And I moved into my buddy's couch. And what happened there is that for about 2 weeks is that I made every decision that I could based on self. You know, I did whatever it is that I wanted. I didn't listen to anybody, and I didn't care. And 2 weeks later, like most self-respecting 18-year-olds do, they run back home to their mother. And I've done that plenty of times. I've always run back to family or friends that I knew would help me. And I got, you know, dishonest again, and I kind of started to let people in. And what happened was she drew up a list, and she's like, these are the do's and don'ts if you want to live here. If you want to live here, you can't drink. You can't get high anymore. And I don't want you to hang out with those people. And the dudes were like, go to school if you want, get a job, and contribute to the family and show up. Because the Thanksgiving before I got sober right around this time is that I made a conscious decision that it was inconvenient to show up for my family, just as it was for my own birthday the year prior and many other things, is that things in life that matter to normal people just didn't seem to matter because it was inconvenient to my drinking, you know. And I told my mom I was sick. She didn't believe me. I said, wait an hour. You know, if you were doing the things I was doing, getting sick was a frequent in the morning. And what happened was I had enough to get me through the day. And what she came home to find was, a trail of multiple fluids from the garage to the front door. And I was passed out on the bed. And that was what she came home to, Thanksgiving 2008. And that was the expected in my household. And what happened was I went back out and I came home and I told my mom, I give up, you win. You know, and that was the first time that I was willing to concede to myself that I didn't have the answer for whatever the problem is. And she had been through the ringer with my dad. She sent me a nice little Saturn View ride up to Lafayette, New Jersey. I went to a rehab, and it was my first introduction to a detox and rehab. And I can tell you that what happened there in detox is that it was funny. They told me that they weren't going to fund me because it was my first time trying to come into a rehab. Had I been someone that had come back a bunch, they would have funded me. I said, I will gladly leave now. You know, like, there's not a problem, you know. This is fine. If that's your requirement for you guys to take me, that's fine. And because what happened was physically, I couldn't take it anymore, you know. Being sick in the waiting room, you know how that is. It's fantastic. And they took me and they gave me medicine, whatever. And I go to that rehab and they send, what happened was somewhere between there and that 2 weeks, what had happened was the conversations, my mom called me up and she goes, are you there? You know, she called the counselor first to make sure I was still there. And they told me that, you know, she was going to come and visit. And I went in the waiting room, she came down, whatever. And for about, she drove 45 minutes to an hour to say three things to me and then left. You know, she goes, hey, how's it going? You're lucky I'm not pressing charges. And I can't believe not only did my marriage, my wedding ring went for the same thing, and then left. And it was just one of those moments where my heart sunk and I realized that getting sober was going to be a hell of a lot harder when I didn't realize what the hell I was doing. You know, and that's really what it came down to, is after that moment I realized that I didn't know what I was doing and I needed help. You know, and that's a huge thing for a guy like me that always thinks he has the answers. And what happened was I ended up going to a recovery house and I moved out to Warren County, New Jersey. Not going to say anything bad about Warren County, but there's more sheep than there are people. And for me, trying to get sober with no car, there's a black lab, five guys I don't know in front of a river with no transportation. Kill me, you know? And that's basically was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can tell you that people get introduced various different ways. And coming into that house and leaving that house, I had two completely different perspectives of what was going on in my life. And what happened was like what's talked about frequently, I'm sure from this podium and many others, is that God started to put the players in my life. You know, I found a job, you know, through luck, and I still work at the same place today. I mean, between having a job and the consistency that I have in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think this is the only two things I've been dedicated the most to and been consistent with my entire life. Because outside of those two things, I mean, really, a day, week, maybe a year, I'll be consistent with something, but surely it falls off, you know. What I found is that through a short period of time is that I had experience here in Alcoholics Anonymous with members that were willing to sit down and share their experience with me and what they've gone through and what they've done and better yet, how they feel now based on what they've done. And that's what really grabbed me here, is that they really were talking the same language as me. You know, what happened was I think I was a month and a half, 2 months sober, and I called Jeff up, like 11 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, Jeff, do you want to hang out or get together or something like that? And this is the same thing, is you know, if somebody's calling you at like 11 o'clock in the morning to hang out or something like that, and they're new in AA, it's really because, you know, my experience is that they're uncomfortable, you know? He's like, sure, I'll be over in, I don't know, maybe a half hour, an hour. And the first thing that ran through my mind is, like, I'm thinking Tuesday, Jeff. You know, because once somebody not as a dig, but what happens is as soon as somebody offers me help, I'm like, well, is it really that bad that I need to do something about it? You know, and that's what runs through my mind more than anything else, is that it's not the people offering me help. It's not that I think you guys are weird. I think you guys are, you know, a happy band of givers, you know, and I admire that, you know, and that was a cool thing about AA, is that I admired what you guys had. I just, at that point, I looked at what you had to do, and I was like, really? You know, and what happened is that he picked me up, and through the conversation that we had in his living room, is basically what had happened with Bill and Dr. Bob, is that, you know, Dr. Bob sat down with Bill, and he said that he was only going to give him a little bit of his time. In the back of my mind is that if this isn't going well in about a half hour, I'm going to say my dog died, you know, and we sat there, I want to say like 3 hours, it was 2.5 hours, it was quite a long time, and what I found is that for the first time in my life is that somebody had really felt the same way I felt, had done the same things I'd done, and had an experience of what had happened in their lives. And the only thing different between his story and mine is that, you know, he had a what it was like portion. He had done something about the problem and had a solution in his life, and you could see that he was a genuinely happy person. And for me, I think the last time I've been genuinely happy is like those first moments when you wake up out of bed Christmas morning and you're walking towards a tree and you feel like that joy and that hope that you're going to get what you want. And you look at the gift and then you realize it's not the right size of the gift that you wanted. And between the point of getting out of bed and to seeing the gift is like the only real genuine happiness I think I've ever had in my life, you know. And not to say anything bad about my, you know, anything that's ever happened in my life is that's just always how I felt. You know, if there wasn't something in it for me, what's the point? And I sat down and I, like most good newcomers, I balked for a little while. And, you know, finally what happened was I conceded to the fact that I needed help. You know, I had a different sponsor at a time that, you know, I'd ran out of fourth step with, and our schedules didn't match up. And we took a long ride down here. It was February, I think, February or March, or it was one of those months. And what happened was we took a ride down like an hour and a half to go to a meeting and to hear this guy talk, and I was like, an hour and a half is way too far. There's a meeting in Frenchtown down the road. And what I found was that I got in that guy's car, and he asked me how I was doing. I think after I took a nap for a little while, I woke up, and he asked me how I was feeling. And for the first time, I got honest with somebody for the second time, you know, or the third time or whatever. And in a consecutive, you know, number of days is that I told him that I felt like killing myself that day. You know, I felt horrible. You know, I had this fourth step right now, and the next day what happened was he made himself available. And what I find great about people in Alcoholics Anonymous that make themselves available is that really what I found by doing that is that my life doesn't seem that weird, you know, and my thinking doesn't feel that abnormal. And I sat down and I did my fifth step with him, and what happened was I walked away from that experience just with a little bit of relief that somebody else just knew how weird I was and that the majority of my problem was me, you know, because for a long time I really felt that the majority of my problem was you guys, you know, not necessarily you. You know, really it was my mom, you know, it was my dad, you know, it was all the people in my life that I thought screwed me. It was that coach that didn't let me go on a basketball team. And I don't think he even made it to that inventory. But what happened was, you know, is that I jumped into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, with both feet. And I just started trying to see what else was happening. I tried to have an experience here. And what I found is that from that time to now, the consistency of my life has been just this, is that I wake up on a daily basis and I pray and I ask for a little direction. You know, and then that throughout the day, I try to check myself. And for a while, I want to say probably about the past 6 months, that I really haven't been doing that. Throughout the day, I've been realizing that I'm doing something wrong and then continuing to do it and not care. You know, and at the end of the day, like trying to figure out why I'm so frustrated and I'm doing it, you know. And what happened was I've been spending a lot of time in 6 and 7 because somewhere between, you know, 6 and 7, you know, willing to let God in and praying to have God remove those defects of character, good or bad, because I really don't know which is which. You know, for a guy like me, I just know that there's something wrong with me, you know, and I need some help. And what happens is I'm spending a lot of time just meditating and praying about those two things, you know. Not trying to figure out what's good and bad, just having God remove those things and trying to be principled, you know. And I can say that honestly is that when I do that, I mean, really the results are phenomenal. You know, I wake up in the morning, when I go to work, I'm not thinking about who I'm going to kill first, you know. And I leave feeling relatively happy. What I can say, though, is I moved away from that house and I moved away from this home group. I found another home group just like this, you know. And like I said in the beginning, I walked into a room in my own town, further away from something that was comfortable with me, with a bunch of people just like you guys that seemed to have it together. And I was going through a time where I just didn't feel like I had it together, you know. Although everything was there, I just didn't feel like I did. And I asked this guy to sponsor me, and I've been working with him. And what happened was, you know, I made a lot of amends in Alcoholics Anonymous, and somewhere between cleaning house in 4 and 5 and making amends and inviting God in on a daily basis, that the majority of my day is relatively comfortable. You know, I have a life today that absolutely does not resemble the life I came in Alcoholics Anonymous with. You know, the back seat of my car doesn't have more crack pipe burns than cigarette burns, you know, and that's pretty remarkable for a guy like me. Like, that's an upgrade in my life. And I find that a lot of those things just kind of come, you know. But what's happened more importantly is that I felt relatively comfortable with myself from day to day, you know. I sponsor a number of guys, and that's really what was stressed me, is that when we were going through that book, you know, I think one of the the first things that was shown to me was the forward to the third edition at the bottom, and it says recovery begins every day when one alcoholic starts sharing with another, experience strength and hope. In the third edition, you know, prior to getting to the doctor's opinion and Bill's story and their solution of working with others, what it talks about is sharing experience. You know, and what I've done from basically the time I had about 90 days sober to now is that I've just been trying to do just that, you know, share what I have with other guys. And I sponsor a number of guys, you know, in various parts of New Jersey, and that's kind of cool for a guy like me, you know. And what happens is throughout that period is that, you know, I have people calling me, so I'm accountable to them, you know. And then I call my sponsor because I don't have the answers always, you know. And sometimes I get diverted to pray, you know. And then what happens is somewhere along those lines is that all the stuff I've been showing in Alcoholics Anonymous seems to just come full circle, you know. And I'm not thinking about myself as much, you know. The majority of the conversations I have with my sponsor don't revolve around me; they revolve around the guys I'm working with, you know. And my grand sponsor now, what he says is that, you know, you can see really Alcoholics Anonymous working when the guys you're working with are working with others, you know, because that means they found a God of their own understanding, and they're not being, you know, relying on the sponsor. They're being relying on God and helping others. And that's pretty cool, because what I get to see is some guys that I sponsor work with other people, and I realize that they're not relying on me. They're relying on intuition to help other people to stay sober, you know, really what this whole thing is founded on, you know. And just take part of that and watch lives get rebuilt just by reading some directions in a book that were written down, you know, somebody can tell me how many years ago, I don't know, off the top of my head. Thank you. The response is uncanny. what I found is that really those directions apply to my life at all times, regardless if I believe it or not. I was talking to a number of guys tonight, you know, before I got here, is that really the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous goes against every moral fiber of my being. You know, like, there's nothing that I read in that book that I'm like, that's a good idea, you know? Help other people. Help me, you know? Pray for those that you have a resentment against or you're angry against. You know, I'm like, why? You know, just cut their brakes. And what happens is, you know, over a period of time when I do that, I realize that just how self-centered I am, and realize how much I focus my entire world around me. You know, really, you know, it's a lot easier to feel better here in Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm revolving a lot of my time around you. You know, my family relations as a result of all the stuff have looked a hell of a lot better than when they got here. You know, I have a relationship with my mom, and that relationship is absolutely awesome. You know, I had Thanksgiving with my aunt and several other family members, and it was like no other Thanksgiving we ever had. It was only 8 of us, which is relatively small, and we had a good time and we laughed. You know, and like I said, Thanksgiving 3 years ago, I couldn't show up, you know. The drink took precedence. You know, on the Christmas before this one, I was sitting in a rehab. And the New Year's before this one, I was, you know, a couple years ago, I was sitting in a rehab. You know, and it seems like what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is that not only in my life is that I get to start showing up for the other people's lives around me. You know, and like I said, I have a small family, but I have a decent-sized family. And what happened was I started showing up for my cousins' soccer games and their you know, baseball games and their birthday parties, and what happened was about a year and a half ago, it was my cousin's birthday party. I decided to take a ride down and see her soccer game, and then I showed up to the birthday party, and we hung out, and I was the only one that showed up to the soccer game, and my uncle came out, and right as I was leaving, and he said, listen, I don't know why you showed up, and that's not, you know, I appreciate it, but I do want to tell you that you're the first family member in like 3 years that's ever shown up to her games, and they all live about 15 minutes away. You know, so thanks. And it's little glimpses like that in Alcoholics Anonymous that realize that what I'm doing is right, you know, and that my relationship with God is right, and that the things I'm doing are being more of a giver than a taker, you know. And about a month ago, he's like, listen, I have a timeshare in Mexico. If you want it, you know, next year, it's yours. I'm like, what? You know, people didn't even allow me in their house while they were home in this state, in this country, you know. Now an opportunity to stay in a place in a different country unsupervised. That's amazing. and I can only say this, is that it's only been because of Alcoholics Anonymous and showing up consistently, you know. And along the way, there's been a lot of things that I've learned not to do, you know. And that's a great part about this, is that if I show up consistently enough, it's that I learned what to do and what not to do, either by my actions or by the actions around me. You know, and because of that, I get to show up at the end of the day sober, just because I consistently try, you know. And that's a cool thing. Like I said, my home group is an Akong Working With Others group. We meet Thursday nights at 8 o'clock in a speaker's meeting. We meet Sunday nights at 6:30, and it's a discussion meeting, and it's not that kind of discussion meeting. It's a It's a discussion meeting that you show up and we discuss how we've applied the solution to Alcoholics Anonymous to our week. And the people that share in that meeting, you know, we kind of go around in a circle and the same players sit in the same seats and they talk about their week. And what happens is they talk about the problems, you know. They talk about a lot of things that happened in their week, but then they share about what they did to get over it. And a lot of it revolves around those things that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis. They prayed about the person that they were mad at, or they did something to go out of their way, or whatever it was. You know, they realized they were playing God. And that's been the majority of my problems, that I realized that, you know, over a period of time, is that I'm trying to play God once again, you know, in the family relationship or, you know, the relationship I have, you know, with the people in AA, you know, is that I expect something out of it, so I'm going to do whatever I can to get it. And on a weekly basis, I show up to this home group, and I just try to be consistent. And I found more guys to work with there than I have, you know, just traveling around from meeting to meeting, because I've consistently shown up, and I know who's new, you know, and that's kind of cool, because when I used to come here, said I'd walk in, and I'd be like, there's a lot of people here, how am I going to know? And then about 3 or 4, 6 months later, I realized who the new guys were, you know, and they were the guys that looked like me, you know, and what happened was, I'll tell you this quick story, and then I'll shut up, so you guys can get home to 2 and a half men or whatever's on. I was about 3 or 4 months sober, and my sponsor thought it would be a good idea to start working with other people, and I think I was like 3 months sober, and I had done a fourth or fifth step, and I started to make amends, and we sat down, you know, and we read through 86 to 88, and he said to go help people, and I found this guy, Steve, and Steve was, you know, a guy that looked worse off than me when he came into AA, so I thought it was perfect, you know, maybe he'll listen, and he was crunched over outside a meeting looking like he was about to throw up, and I was like, that's the guy, you know? And it was like God had just, like, lit the alleyway perfectly, like, go to him. And I walked over to him, and I was like, Steve, how you doing? He's like, not that good. I was like, perfect, you know? And because that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for somebody that's not that good, you know? If somebody has all their stuff together and life's going good, like, God bless you, you know? Because when I got here, nothing was going good. I talked to that guy for about a half hour that night, and I drove him around for about a week, and what happened within that week is that the job that I was showing up to that I absolutely hated, and a lot of things in my life that I hated, like that dog and the people I lived with, they didn't seem that bad. They seemed kind of bearable, and what I found is that through all of the stuff that I was dealing with at about 3 or 4 months over that most people deal with, like, you know, should I stay? What's the point? You know, a lot of, like, the back and forth of just the unsureness and the uncomfortability and feeling, you know, angry all the time, or, you know, seeing which part of 78 you should run your car off of, or whatever it is, you know, for you guys, is that around that time is that I realized that what I should be doing here is trying to be of service. And like it says in the book, is try to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to others. You know, and through doing that, I turned around and I realized after a week that my life wasn't that bad. I had a pretty cool house that I lived in right in front of a river, and I had a dog that I always wanted, and then I got one, you know. And that's, like, been the majority of the things. You know, I get something that I really want, I look at it, I'm like, it's not that shiny, you know. And that was, like, really my introduction to helping others. And from that time to now, I've gotten a similar result, you know, based on that experience. And that's why I keep coming back. Thank you very much.